From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. This week's film is Fight Club. Again. And what is this? Who am I? Well, my name is Heidi Hilliker. You may recognize me from my previous Film Grok podcasts. I'm subbing for Serge today because this is a very special Fight Club commentary, and it's from a female's perspective, which means it's only us women here. Joining me are
Nicole Augustus
and
Laura Thompson.
Before we get started, our cue point for Fight Club is right after the Regency logo has faded into black. So when we're ready to go, I'll give you a countdown. 3, 2, 1, play. You'll hit play. Then you get to listen to us in sync with the film. So while I cue up the film, or while you cue up the film, we'll talk not only about our first time seeing Fight Club, but why it's important to get a woman's perspective on this film. And would you like to start, Nicole? When was the first time you saw this?
I probably first saw it in the movie theater in 1999. It is, it's a radically different perspective seeing it 10 years away, for sure. And it's also very different seeing it when you know the twist at the ending than when you don't.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And?
And, of course, I actually had the twist ending spoiled for me before I saw the movie ever. So I actually did not see the movie for many years because I was young when it came out, and my friend was like, oh, yeah, and she spoiled the ending, and I was just like, well, that's dumb. So I never saw it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, of course, years later, I kept hearing about how amazing it was, so I'm like, all right, I'll watch it. And it was amazing.
So about how long ago was it that you saw it for the first time?
Maybe 4 years ago, honestly.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly. I had seen parts of it on TV, and then finally I sat down and watched it, and I was like, oh. Because, you know, you always see the men fighting and
yeah, sure.
All the gritty aspects of it. And
rippling abs.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And I thought, this is just a dude film, you know, whatever. But then when I finally actually committed to watching it, and also I was older and wiser at the time, too, then I was like, okay, I get this movie.
Yeah, I actually had the ending a little bit spoiled for me as well, but I didn't know. I heard someone talking about it. This dates me, but I was in high school when this came out, and I heard some people in the computer lab kind of talking about it, you know, like they're Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, and then I heard someone say, same, and I just put my hands over my ears and ran out because I didn't want to know what they had to say. But, you know, I did eventually go and see it in the theaters, and somehow I managed to just try to disconnect from that information as much as possible.
Right.
But really loved it, you know, especially like as a teenager, you know, there's just something about like the anti-authority, anti-establishment aspect to it.
Yeah.
Right.
And by the way, if you're listening to this and haven't already watched this and know what the ending is, you should probably have turned this off about 10 minutes ago. Watch the movie by yourself. Come back. Listen to this. You'll be happier. We'll be happier. You won't be sending emails to Serge, who we have tied up in the corner, by the way, saying, oh, my God, why did you spoil this for us? How dare you do that? So really.
But I can attest to having seen the movie for the first time, already knowing the ending. I can say that it was really interesting because I was watching the movie for clues, which is what people generally do the second time. For me, it was like, wait a minute. And honestly, as I was watching it, I almost started to wonder if I had even heard right, if indeed they were the same person, because it is so convincing.
Right. Yeah. And it is the kind of film where you could maybe see how someone came up with their own interpretation of it. So I don't know, I guess.
Yeah.
We're not spoiling it, I guess, for anyone. It's all your own interpretation.
Right.
It's all a dream.
Yeah, Rosebud was a sled.
Uh-oh.
Bruce Willis is dead.
Uh-oh. Spoiler alert. We are giving it all away.
Yeah, we're not just going to spoil Fight Club for you. We're going to spoil every movie ever made.
At any chance. So if you haven't been up to date on all your movie watching, I'm sorry.
Look out.
Yeah.
These ladies
are
going to
ruin it. What are
you
doing here?
Yeah. So,
but this is pretty interesting, you know, that we're just doing it just the women.
I think that women have a definitely different perspective on it than men, because face it, there's really only one female character in it.
Oh yeah,
right. And the film does in fact fail the Bechdel test pretty miserably.
Yeah, it sure does.
And for those listening, if you don't know what the Bechdel test is, there's three things that you have to pass. There has to be at least two main female characters
who
two have to actually speak to each other.
Fail.
And three, they have to to talk to some each other about something other than a man.
Fail, 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 yeah. fail.
Yeah.
So that actually was one of the another reasons why when I was young and it first came out and I saw that it was such a male heavy picture, it just didn't appeal to me. There was mm-hmm. one girl and she's and it, which is actually true. She's just basically there to be the sex object.
Yeah. But interestingly enough, I think there are a lot of films that are that fail because they don't include women because there are roles that could clearly be female roles. This film, I think it makes sense because part of the idea is just all about it's all about men getting in touch with their maleness, and it makes sense to have it be an all male film.
And I completely understand that, and I give this film a pass for that. Having seen it now, I'd be like, okay,
I'll pass.
I understand, but at the same time,
yeah.
Well, I'm sure we can explore more into the female areas and of this film, you know, as we go through, and everything that's just male about it as well, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So in the meantime, Serge, can you press that play button with your nose? Did we leave you loose enough for that?
Or maybe your toe.
Yeah. All right. So shall we count it down?
Yeah, we're going to
count
down.
Should we count it together since we're female and we
Yeah,
are
I think we're
going
to have some empowerment. Like I think we should just do a 3-2-1 and play.
Okay.
So ready?
Mm-hmm.
3-2-1 play.
Woohoo.
And there we go.
I am Jack's circa 2000 title sequence.
And the music in this movie is so good. I almost forgot.
Yeah, but man, this title sequence, boy, if it dates it tremendously.
Well, and interestingly enough, X-Men seem to have ripped it off, actually, with their title
sequence.
Yeah, maybe
Spider-Man did, too. Yeah. I think.
and a lot of TV shows ripped this off when CGI started getting cheaper in the mid-2000s.
Yeah. Like, oh, Meatloaf. Sorry.
Yeah. Got it. Shout out to Meatloaf. But Jared Leto. Wasn't this one of Jared Leto's first films?
I don't know. I don't know. He had definitely been in some things. I think it was several years after he kind of like popped on the scene, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah. The Dust Brothers, again, dating this to circa 2000.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is.
I know 1999, but really it is like, hello, I am Jax, circa 2000 title sequence.
It was very, very turn of the century, because we can say that now.
Turn of the century, oh my gosh.
Yeah, but I know the title sequence blew me away when I saw it. It seemed so innovative and so freaky
and fresh.
Yes,
you just didn't see a lot of this.
And then again, unfortunately, because I saw it many years afterwards, I had already seen similar title sequences. So I'm mm-hmm. like,
right,
okay.
Right,
right.
What's the one where they?
That's the barrel of the gun, huh?
Yeah. I just remember like the impact of seeing this, like this beginning. It just hits you like right away. It's like you know what kind of movie this is going to be. You know, it's action. It's
gritty. Yep. It's violent.
It's dirty. It's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of sunlight in this film.
No.
No, there really isn't. Yeah.
It's all cloudy, dark.
Which encompasses the feeling inside.
Yeah. Yes, I wear black on the outside because black is how I feel on the inside.
But see, all these sequences, you know, like back, you know, all this like pulling through and like showing things and like showing the building. I mean, there really wasn't. This is a style that's very popular now. But at that time, it was so new. It was so fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that used a lot in CSI now?
Probably. Along with like the zooming in on really obvious evidence.
Yeah. It's also House
which
uses that a lot.
They use that in Psych.
Yeah. House uses that a lot. Coming up with the disease of the week.
Oh, yes.
My name is Bob.
They apparently built two fat suits, one with nipples and one without, because they were concerned that the nipples would get banned by the production, by the MPAA.
Yeah. That's actually a good idea on their part.
That is smart.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Like, I do submittal work for the MPAA for my work sometimes, and you never know what's gonna come back with the rating, like why they're gonna give you a rating. I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah.
Meatloaf is so amazing in this. Meatloaf is an actor who does not get enough credit.
Ever.
Yeah. Yeah. He's actually genuinely a really good actor. And the man wore a 100-pound fat suit for this, and that has to count for something.
Absolutely. He was committed. Although if he was really committed, he would have gone all Robert De Niro.
And just gained it.
Yeah.
For this one little role.
Oh, and I love this too, which is something that I feel like I don't. Yeah. Yes,
they had the little clip of Tyler Durden.
Yeah, the little insert. What do they call that later on? Yeah. Oh, I'll know when it comes up.
The porn inserts,
right? Yeah, yeah. When they're talking about that, when he's working at the theater.
But Splice. I love how, but Splice. I love how everyone has their cup of Starbucks when they're standing at the copiers.
Right,
right.
Because it is. It's so like this is the generic like. Sad, pathetic, everyday humdrum life of an American. Yeah. You go in, the lighting's really green. Everybody looks really gaunt.
It's like taking Office Space to the next level.
Right.
Everyone wears a tie, but no one wears a jacket.
It actually reminds me a little bit of the beginning of Joe versus the Volcano. Do you know what I mean? Where it's all like really green and like awful.
Yeah.
And the house porn, he's actually reading it like you read about guys reading Playboy.
Right. He's got like the, he's got like the centerfold.
Holding it like centerfold.
Exactly.
Yes. Good call. Good call.
I remember this next sequence seemed to me, with all of the catalog titles popping up, seemed to me to be so shocking when I saw this in 1999, and it actually threw me out of the movie a little bit. It took me a little while to get back into it. And it's funny because a lot of this is not 30. Actually IKEA. And the reason that's funny is because IKEA furniture pops up everywhere, especially in science fiction shows and movies. You want to make something futuristic, you put it in IKEA.
Right.
Yes. Science fiction movies look like my living room.
The funny thing, though, is that, you know, when this film came out, IKEA wasn't something that was readily available to most Americans.
Right.
Like, actually, probably only if you lived, like, in L.A. or Chicago or, like, a New York area.
Right.
Would you even see IKEA? Like, we didn't have that. I had no idea what that was referencing. Mm-hmm. Although I still understood, you know, to me, I imagined it to be something else. But, like, it wasn't until years later that I figured out what IKEA was that I was like, oh, that's what they were doing. And it actually makes a lot more sense because it even enhances the more like the disposable lifestyle he has, you know, these things.
Yeah.
And IKEA is mass produced furniture.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not like, you know, the Amish handcrafting the furniture, or just even a mom and pop store where they handcraft the furniture and put lots of love into it.
Oh, you missed a Tyler Durden blip there.
Yeah, a little blip.
They're all over.
If you missed it, feel free to pause this. We'll wait until you come back and watch that.
That's not true. Just for you gullibles out there, that's not true.
So
we're getting into the groups.
Oh yeah,
I'm Cornelius.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that has any significance that he chose the name Cornelius.
It apparently does, but I don't remember what the significance is. It has to do with like 60s movies, 60s viral,
like
60s
Planet of the
viral
Apes.
Men. Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
So
I bet it's more sussed out in the book.
Yeah.
Have either of you ever read the book?
No.
I have not.
Me either.
It's interesting how they shot this, and just they look like, you know, tightly drawn together in this really open space. And you can see how for some of these people this is the only community they have.
Right.
And that's the interesting thing, is he goes to these groups seeking community, and that's the thing that's lacking in his life.
Yeah, he has no family. There doesn't appear to have any friends. Mm-hmm. There's no girlfriend in his life. There's no nobody in his life except for his stuff.
Oh, and there was another Tyler Durden blip behind one of those guys.
It's this movie's littered with them.
Yeah, and there's
Robert Paulson.
Aww.
I just really adore him with the gigantic man boobs. He would never have been able to grow those real man boobs on
his
own.
That's true.
And he's so genuinely caring is the other thing. He reaches out.
But what's interesting about this, and I think that this is kind of like a lot of the main theme of this movie, in my opinion, is just this generation of men who don't, like, they don't have, like, their essence, they don't have their masculinity, they don't have, you know, and I see this a lot even with men my age, which are a little bit younger, but this whole thing, you know, they grew up in an era where they never really had to grow up, and, like, you know, they didn't have, like, a war, or they didn't have anything that they had to have a lot, you know, be testosterone driven for.
Right. It's like in the olden days, the man provided for the woman. Like, the women didn't work. The man was the one who went out and he like fought, you know, and brought home the bacon and, you know, protected his woman.
Right. And now they're just lost.
But then again, that idea that the man went out and earned the money is really, and that women didn't work, is actually a sociological construct. lower and middle class women did work, even in the 1800s and 1700s. Yeah, yeah. Both parties had to work in order to ensure survival.
Right.
But then it was to ensure survival. Now it is to ensure a more awesome IKEA coffee table.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, less about keeping the wolf away from the door and more about keeping the credit card companies at bay. So.
Right, but if you go all the way back to caveman times,
I mean, it is. It's psychological breakdown, you know. It definitely is. I mean, and again, I think that that's what this whole movie is about, like being men, you know, kicking some ass.
And he sleeps like a little boy. Yeah, notice.
Well, they're so childlike. All the people in those groups, you know, they're all these men. They have this emotion. They don't know what to do with it. They don't have anywhere to put it.
Right. But I think also it's sort of indulging the male primal urge for violence. I mean, you think about all the violent video games that boys and guys and men play nowadays. I mean, that comes from somewhere. It comes from this urge inside of them to express themselves physically.
But still, even that's a little disattached. You know what I mean? Like, you can play those games all you want. And it definitely satiates something inside, but it's not quite the same as being
actually
physical.
Doing it. Yeah.
This is an interesting scene coming up, actually. There's this right here where she has the woman with terminal cancer speak. Well, and then there's this like whole wifty suck in the energy from the air thing, but it's the stuff that right after here where she calls up Chloe. So that breath that he's breathing is actually recycled from Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic. Scene, but they actually pulled the CGI because it was that difficult to reconstruct CGI at the time. And adorable penguin.
Yeah.
Adorable CGI penguin.
You know what? But it doesn't even look that bad, though.
Yeah.
It actually kind of holds up okay. I mean, I've seen worse CGI than that. Like,
yeah, have you seen The Social Network? Some pretty bad CGI breath.
I guess the sequence I'm thinking of comes a little later. My mistake.
Well, you'll be ready for it when it comes.
Yeah, exactly. I have things to say, so.
Aw. But that's not even why Bob loved you, man. He didn't love you just because of your testicles.
And look how happy he is. Yeah. He's like a little baby in Bob's arms. Well, and the interesting thing, honestly, the fact that Bob has man moves. Yeah. It's kind of like a mother figure to him.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing, too, you know, like things people talk about often about like men of these generations also being just raised only by their mothers. And I mean, there's a lot into that, which I think could be.
And she's the woman invading the men's space.
Yep.
And look at how different she looks. She's in all black.
Yep.
She's in sunglasses. She's smoking.
Yep.
This sets her apart from the rest of the group. And she's a dissonant and disruptive.
Although there's at least another woman there.
Before
Marla comes in.
But in the testosterone group, she's the only
woman. Yeah, but those people don't. Those other women don't matter.
Yeah.
They're just decoration.
They're just extras.
But I like the symbolism of that, you know, from a man's perspective, it's like, this is the woman who's coming in and is, you know, is the anti them, you know, the anti masculinity. She is, she's the force that pushes their buttons, you know.
Another Tyler Durden flash. And also she's invasive in her sexuality. Yep. She is the predatory woman.
Yep.
Right.
Even if she's not pursuing him for sex.
Right.
She's
which
aggressive.
I think is how the sexes have changed, you know, I mean, at least like outwardly, you know, maybe not in like our everyday lives or like at home, but as in the media and in the workforce, you know, women have become more predatory, as you say. And I think that has also added to this problem of men feeling emasculated.
And this is the sequence I was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of predatory sexuality, this is, I found very interesting.
I feel like she's one of the few like normal real women talking about the lack of women in the film, like even though it's like a tiny part, it's like a real person, because this film is like full of caricatures, you know what I mean?
But
but this is too. Wait. And it's played for laughs, but at the same time, she is desperately trying to reach out to someone for this last grasp of life, which really echoes what they're doing with the violence and trying to reach out for something to make them feel alive.
Right.
So it's an interesting echo, but it's also interesting that it's, you know, when I'll be interested to watch this, but it seems until we encounter Tyler Durden, the only people we see reaching out to initiate a sexual experience are the women.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, I haven't seen this in a few years, so I can't say I'm really crisp on that, but I would agree with you. We'll see. I love that. And she's the power animal.
Right. Exactly. But she says it's a lie, and she's talking about...
I think she said slide.
Oh.
I think that comes in later on. Mm. Like he slides like the penguin. Mm. I think that's what happens. Again, we'll see. It's a good thing we're watching this movie right now.
She said that she was trying to emulate the later years of Judy Garland in this role.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I can kind of see that, actually.
I see that, yeah. Because Judy Garland did look like a mess.
A mess. A mess.
The studio apparently wanted Reese Witherspoon for this role.
What?
Oh, no.
And this goes back to, like, every time I always feel like whatever the final casting decision was for a good movie, it was, like, the right one. Like, if something happens out there karmically that just, like, leads the wrong actors away from these roles. Yeah. Could you imagine?
Oh, my gosh. That would have been so wrong.
She's also about 10 years too young to really be able to pull off this. I don't think she could pull off the confrontational nature or the aggressive nature.
Or that kind of like dark awkwardness. Because I think Helena Bonham Carter is awkward. I think she plays that really well. I think that's something that lives inside of her and she can bring it to characters.
Well, she's always playing these sort of off-kilter kind of characters. Like even back into, you know, A Room with a View.
Right,
like,
was
one of her first movies. The character was all like a square peg in a round hole.
Right,
there's something wrong with her. That's pretty much what she does.
Yeah.
She specializes in.
The other person that they wanted was Sarah Michelle Gellar. Again,
weird.
No.
Especially because that was like the peak of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. She was like 20 years old. Like, studios. What do they know? Yeah. Yay for David Fincher. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for keeping it real ish.
Wow.
You know, she's flirty, but she's also so walled off. She is so, and that's women.
A lot like a modern woman.
Yeah.
Actually, I think in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not just going to walk around with our hearts on our sleeves, like waiting for someone to take advantage of us or trample on us. You know, our mothers taught us better.
Yeah. Or tighten up my corset strings and let me faint in front of the carriage so that a man can rescue me. I mean, it's definitely not that way anymore.
But she's, you know, she is sort of the
I love her stealing these clothes. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
She is just the, like, the modern woman extrapolated to a great, you know, its ultimate conclusion.
Right. And as well as he is with the modern man.
Mm-hmm.
The emasculated modern man.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, you fool.
Yeah.
Don't you see?
And she just walks into traffic and he is hesitant.
But still, he still needs her. Like, a lot of this movie actually really is about this, the song and dance they're doing, you know, this pursuit.
Yeah, right. It's like a freaky screwball comedy.
Yeah. In a way.
A romantic comedy.
You know?
Yeah.
Like a deep, deep level.
You know, that'd be an interesting trailer re-edit, like the Shining re-edit of The Shining.
Yes.
Imagine redoing this as a screwball romantic comedy.
Like, add some typical romantic comedy trailer music. Like, doop, 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 doop,
mm-hmm.
You got it. You got it.
Tyler Durden is the best friend.
The Three's Company music.
Mm-hmm. Now, there we go.
Get on that and please send it to me.
Well, if I manage to do it next weekend, I'll send it to all of you and...
But again, it's like very like that passive modern male thing. Let's exchange numbers so we can switch nights.
Yeah.
When really he just wants her number.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
He just really just does want to have her number.
But I don't think he's willing to admit that even to
himself. No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. But I think that that's what's really motivating it. It's more, he's interested in her.
Notice we never find out his real name.
We never find out his real name.
Oh, yeah, never. Yeah. They do such a good job about just distracting you from that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the only times we really see daylight for the most part is the only times we see daylight is like when he's on the job.
Yeah,
like
when he's
this.
Working. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When he's him and not Tyler Durden, but he is, but he's not.
Yeah.
But he is Tyler Durden.
But I think it's funny
hang on.
Yeah.
And that is there. Like that is a perfect line to lean
right,
into that, you know, because that is the different person.
And for me, seeing it for the first time and knowing the twist ending, I was like, oh, how obvious.
Yeah.
Like
right,
to
yeah.
me, because I was like, oh, well, they're telling you.
Remember when they had food on planes?
Oh.
And they allowed
wasn't
you
even
to take
that
liquids?
Long ago. Yeah.
And you got a knife so you could cut apart your food.
Oh, my gosh.
And like Tyler Durden also appears in the video that he's about to see on the TV. In the one of the waiters is Tyler Durden.
Yep.
So on the right hand side.
Oh,
welcome.
It's an interesting meditation on humanity and life and how much of a life is worth. And being a recall coordinator, he literally is defining in dollars and cents how much a life is worth. And
That's true.
Plays back to this whole who you are is your identity is defined by your possessions. Your worth is defined,
right,
you know, he defines worth in dollars and cents.
Right.
And then determines whether it's worth it to make these recalls. It's an interesting idea of how people have been commercialized and turned into just another product.
Right. It's not what you do. It's not who you know. It's not the connections you make. It's the things you have.
Right.
Right. And well, and that seems, I guess, for men, but, you know, conversely for women, you're defined still by if you are in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so for so many women, it's like you're single. What's wrong with you?
Things you have.
That's
the thing that they have to
have. Yeah.
Whereas men have to have, you know, a great job, all this stuff. And
yeah. No. This is one of those interesting. And now I'd love to compare this to that sequence in the opening episode of Lost.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Run them side by side and see how they compare.
But what's nice about this is that a lot of these scenes, you know, if they look a little just fantasyful, it works because that's what it is.
Right.
And hello, here we go with Tyler Durden.
Hello.
This look, I mean, gosh, Brad Pitt like shows up in this movie with this look, you know, wearing these like thrift store clothes, like being all dirty. And it was suddenly like the sexiest thing in the whole entire world to just like look like you rolled out of like, you know, like a pile of bums, you know.
I thought this was kind of a look, though, even before this happened. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it wasn't a look.
I think it was kind of bleeding out a little bit into that late 90s
era. It was starting
era.
To happen. But I think that this movie
this
really
made it.
Propelled it forward.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even... Like, again, like, I was in high school, you know, when this came out. So all of a sudden, like, every, like, guy who thinks he's really cool is rocking this Tyler Durden look. I mean, they all had those sunglasses.
Yeah, and the spiked hair.
The spiked hair, the thrift store jacket.
The little chin grizzle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Men.
None of them wore it as well.
Right. Men want to be him, and women want to fuck him. Am I allowed to say fuck? Is that going to get bleeped out? Okay, good.
I think we're good. Sarah just gave us a thumbs up from being tied up in the corner.
Yeah, he managed to wiggle his hand out just that much.
Yeah, he had his moment, Brad Pitt, which lasted at least 15 years, I'd say.
But I would say this is around the height. This is like the tippy-tippy top.
And identical briefcases.
Yep.
Which is fascinating.
Curious. We have the same briefcase.
Mm-hmm. And he has soap. Now, there's a certain level, I'll say it bluntly, there's a certain level of homoerotic flirtation going on here.
Yeah.
If Brad Pitt's character were played by a woman, let's postulate, or better yet, if Edward Norton's character, being the disempowered one, was played by a woman.
Right.
This would be the scene that led up to them having sex.
If this was a French film, they probably would have made one of them a woman and still made them the same person.
Yeah.
Well, but normally in film, the woman is the Edward Norton type character, the more passive, waiting mm-hmm. for someone to take charge and take the lead. But here, it's the opposite. So it is, but it is interesting that he wants to be the Brad Pitt character because he hasn't been able to do that in his real life. And that, and you know, the Brad Pitt character, Brad Pitt, of course, at the time considered the most gorgeous man of all time. Like everyone cool, wants to be him,
you know? Yeah. So cool.
Yeah.
And you could argue that in some films, the man is that disempowered and the woman, the sort of the Tyler Durden-esque character, the manic pixie dream girl, you know?
But I think that this movie really started that whole indie cliche of having the, like, you know, wild, you know, free spirit, pixie dream, independent dream girl, you know, save the guy who's more passive. Like you look at Garden State or Eternal Sunshine. Mm-hmm. Or
yeah.
It's like a whole cliche now.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think it had been around, but like I think movies in the late 90s were really amazing in general. I think there were a lot of great films that came out then. I think a lot of what we see now is just recycled material from that time.
Right.
You know, and it was popping up in a lot of different mediums. I think the same thing we were talking about, even with like the look of him, you know, like his grunge. I think this movie definitely emphasized some of those things that were already happening a lot more than anything else at the time,
mm-hmm.
Which is another thing that makes it so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely was a pioneer.
And this washed out look it's all washed out except Tyler Durden in a red car wearing a red jacket, but everything else is so washed out.
It's, you know, lots super of super shot.
That's LAX,
green.
Eh? I
mm-hmm.
think it is.
It's yeah. it was shot at LAX, but this is supposed to be Wilmington, Delaware, but they weren't allowed to say that it was Delaware. And I like how the slogan for the condo complex is a place to be somebody.
Right. Yeah. Aren't we all somebody already?
Right.
But I love that. Yeah, it's just that generic feeling of everything. Everything's so generic. Everything's so boring.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the question with this scene is, was it an accidental fire or did Tyler Durden, a.k.a. the narrator, burned down his own house?
Oh, I think Tyler Durden burned down
yeah,
house.
I think he yeah. burned it down too.
He was like, it's time for a fucking change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's burn all that IKEA furniture.
Yeah.
It's all plastic anyway.
But notice the symbolism of the yin and yang coffee table and the yin and yang coffee table getting destroyed.
Right.
You know, it's the symbol of his yin and yang being blown up and separated into separate, completely separate components.
Right.
That's a really good point.
And the question is, do you have somebody you can call? And who does he have to call?
He's got nobody but Tyler Durden.
He's got Marla.
Yep. Marla, there you go.
Good thing you asked for her number.
A good thing that just happened to be
not
there
burnt.
And not get burned.
Ah, fantasy. You know.
Yeah, once again, that is, you know, it's so, this was so innovative at the time and so startling, and now everyone uses that.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's pervasive.
But I still think it owns it. You know, watching it now after a few years of, you know, between seeing it for the last time, I think it really does. It owns its style.
Yeah, and I think it makes for, it's used well here, whereas it's kind of gilding the lily in a lot of stuff that mm-hmm. does it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always going to be the best. The first one to do it was the one who had the creative idea to do it, whereas all the copiers, you know, mm-hmm. it's always just going to be a pale copy.
Oh, remember when you could make a payphone call for 25 cents? Remember when there were payphones?
Yeah, exactly. There's one by the 7-Eleven by where my brother lives. It's like the only payphone I even know where one is.
Yeah.
It is amazing how technology and the world has changed in the last 11 years. I mean, when you think about it, like with payphones, there were no cell phones. I mean, there were cell phones, but it was not nearly as prevalent as
right.
it is now.
Right, yeah. right.
And you kind of wonder how this movie would have been different if it had been in now, you know, with the internet and cell phones.
I still think there
that.
Was this like this kind of like dirty kind of, you know, kind of like prehistoric quality to this, where I think even if this was filmed now, they still would have used a payphone.
Right.
You know, I think they still would have kind of tried to
make it timeless
feeling. Yeah, and have it be like, you know, not shiny and new and polished, like not, you know, iPhones, you know, have it be a little grittier and a little more, I don't know, just quirky.
Yeah.
Right.
I love in this movie, he's always eating.
Yeah.
He's even eating when he's on the other line. He's always eating. It's like this indulgence, you know, like, because Tyler is like so indulgent, he can just eat all the time.
But it's interesting that Brad Pitt kind of kept that with him in the Ocean's 11 movies. Like, his character's always eating in those movies, too.
And has a very similar look.
That's true. Indeed. That's true. Yeah.
Although he has the buzz cut in the Ocean.
And he's not nearly as dynamic or hot.
Yeah.
I love it later on when he's in that, like, woman's robe.
Oh, is the interior of this shot at the Derby? It looks like the Derby.
I don't know.
I really think it's the Derby. So, it's those padded
doors.
Yeah,
on the wall.
Yeah.
The doors, not the wall. But yeah, I knew. Yeah. That I'm not very eloquent sometimes.
Yeah.
Doors, yeah. Wall, same thing. One opens.
Which is funny because this location, I know we see this location in Swingers. So it's funny to have, which is another male bonding movie. Yep. So it's funny to have this also set at the same location, even if it's not technically, even if it's the Derby in its role as, you know, the bar. So.
For cool hipster indie film guys.
Yeah.
Oh, hipsters. They must love this movie. I haven't really thought about that too much, but this is probably like their holy grail. He's getting sucked in. He's just glaring at him like he's on like some hot date again with the homoerotic tendencies.
Yep. It really is.
Yeah.
Now the other thing is he's talking about how all of this crass commercialism is going to explode, and it kind of did. You know, all of the bubbles exploded. The results were not necessarily as he thought they would be, but
they may someday.
And it's interesting,
to say that.
But. He says he doesn't smoke.
But he does. Who's the real Tyler Durden, you know? Like, who is he really? Who was he really?
Yeah.
Right. Well, and sometimes I kind of wondered if the narrator was, in fact, like, his real name was Tyler Durden.
No, I think his real name is Tyler Durden.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I know in the script they called him Jack.
Right. Yeah. But I believe his real name is Tyler Durden. I mean, later on when they're talking about how he's flown everywhere and that's the name on all of his tickets.
Exactly.
And notice how his shirt is open to reveal his rippling abs, Brad Pitt. That's there just for the women.
And I think it's a little there for the men. It's like, you want to be this guy? Yeah, you want to be this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's the ultimate cool.
Yeah.
He's not afraid of anything. He's open to anything. You know, he's got like a smart, hip spin on anything he's trying to tell you.
Yep.
He smokes. His hair is dirty. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
This is brilliant, though. I mean, I think this is really the scene where, like, the movie starts.
Yeah.
Like, everything else has been, like, a little bit of a setup and getting you into, like, the vibe of it. And it'll all be called back later. But I think this is right where you're like, okay, this is what Fight Club is. Awesome.
And notice his sunglasses are off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go. Here's the splicing.
And the narrator, is this the only scene where we see the narrator talking to the camera? I think it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's possible.
Beep. I love that. I wonder if they timed it to fit in, like, where those would have actually appeared in the movie.
Right. I wonder. If I was keeping time of this, what was that at, like, 32 minutes?
Yeah. So.
The celebrity voices.
Yes. And that's gotten even worse in animation over the past 10 years. It's
like, can't they hire, like, real voice actors, for goodness sake?
No, it's terrible.
I love that reaction. Did we just see that? Is that real?
And then, of course, ironically, Brad Pitt has participated in now 2 animated films where he was the celebrity voice.
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny.
Interesting and notably, they both talk to the audience in these scenes.
Yeah.
And look how excited he is talking about who Tyler Durden is. Right. Like, he doesn't look at the camera when he's talking about himself, but Tyler Durden, oh my gosh.
Because he's cool.
Yeah.
He's a real guy.
And you suddenly get this charisma from him that you weren't getting in any of the scenes before that.
Yeah, not even when he was, like, crying or, like, going through any of the groups. Like, he was just, like, pathetic. And now he's just got, like, a spark.
Yeah, exactly.
But interesting enough, you know, I mean, this is, like... That whole section was just divulging the backstory of actually how they are the same person, how this is what he's doing when he has insomnia.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I love this.
Gosh, I don't want to die without any scars. Interesting.
But again, and then, of course, he has a scar on his eyebrow, which I don't think that's real for Brad Pitt. I think they probably did that for this movie. Do you think?
I don't know.
I'm not an expert on his face. I wish I was. But... I love later on when they go back and they're showing how he was just fighting with himself. It's brilliant. And Edward Norton does an amazing job fighting with himself.
The interesting thing here is I think when he hits Brad Pitt, he actually reacts to hitting him like his head goes back too. Maybe I'm wrong.
No. See, that's why the movie was so convincing to me. Yeah. Why I started to wonder if I had heard wrong, because he was so convincing that it was two different people.
Yeah.
But sometimes just, I mean, I feel it's a little bit, you know, sometimes I just want to hit someone.
Yeah.
And have it be okay.
Yep. Sometimes I want to set fire to things.
Blow stuff up.
Yeah. Start over.
Note to the FBI. We're not actually intending to do any of those things.
Oh, please no.
Need to track us down. We do have self-control.
Yes.
It's just the dream.
Well, and you know, I think it's especially a very male thing to act out physically, to be violent. I know they've done studies with young kids where they took young boys and they isolated them.
Sharing the beer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the interesting going back and seeing this sharing the beer scene, when you see that, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
So Paper Street, I wonder if there's symbolism
house.
To that.
I don't know where this house is, but it's the perfect house.
It looks like the Addams Family house.
Yeah, it does. It's like scary. It's a little creepy. But as they all kind of move in, it does feel a little homey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how I found it. About that. Yeah. Edward Norton, you're reading my mind.
Yeah, it's definitely like... At some point, it was like a rich person's house. It's got, you know, the fancy chandelier and all the rooms.
And it's kind of reflective of that old era, you know, that we're away from, where like you would have a home like this.
When real men were real men.
Right.
And real and women stayed home and did the dishes.
Yeah, exactly. In the kitchen, barefoot. No.
Yeah.
He's like, we're not going to live in some IKEA-infused, like, condominium. No.
This ratty mattress, which I'm sure, you know, bed bugs and... And this,
oh, I love this.
Making toast
there
over
he is.
The burner.
There he is. There's that robe. Why is that so sexy? It is a pink, fluffy robe.
Yeah.
I don't even know why. That is very appealing to me.
Yeah.
And then imagine, like, these guys are coming out of this bar, and what they're really seeing is just Edward Norton, like, kicking the shit out of himself.
Which is why they don't intervene. Would you intervene with a crazy person like that?
No.
But at the same time, I think that's why they think he has a lot of moxie.
Yeah, like, exactly.
All right.
Yeah, and notice that they're looking at Edward Norton. Mm-hmm. They're not looking at Brad Pitt.
Yeah, there's a number of places where that comes up, where everyone ignores Brad Pitt's character.
Right.
There's something a little bit Burning Man about by the end of the first month, I didn't miss TV.
He's like, I'm out of
that
it.
Other stuff. Yeah.
I'm back to like the bare bones essentials of being a human being.
Yeah.
Going back to nature.
Oh, and he raises his hand. Look how polite.
Mm-hmm.
May I be next?
Yeah.
Look at that shirt. The costumes in this movie are out of control. They really are good.
Apparently, they were really drunk when they were shooting this scene.
With the golf clubs.
Yeah.
That could have been dangerous.
Yeah.
I want to know where this is. I wish I knew.
Oh, and they've got candles, even more, you know, primitive.
Yep.
Primitive. That's like the best word. Yeah.
It is all about being primitive, this movie.
Mm-hmm. And doing the things mom wouldn't let you do, like riding the bike in the house.
Right.
Reading with a flashlight at night when the lights are out.
Doing whatever the hell you want just to do it.
Yeah.
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 And then again, like back to that generic Jack and Jill.
And notice he...
No identity.
He got thrown off the bike, but he's the one with the cut lip.
Right.
See?
Right.
Oh my God, his boss, this guy.
But notice now, all of a sudden, he's got that like charisma, that
right.
cool,
that look
sex
in his
appeal.
Eye. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Edward Norton is extremely sexy as well. I just think it's hard to really stand up next to Brad Pitt in this movie. But if he was by himself, he would really yeah. shine.
Well, I think part of it, though, is that part of his role is not to be as sexy as Brad Pitt. And I think, you know, look at his body in American History X. If
yeah.
he were that ripped.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, yeah.
That's mm. true.
Then he deliberately got unripped in order to play this role.
Unripped.
So, yeah. De-ripped.
That is a technical term.
Yeah. But look at the feminine touch of the flowers and how it's getting dilapidated, how the water is causing the flower painting in the long shot. You'll see it again, the flower painting in the upper left-hand corner.
Perhaps they're saying, you know, femininity is decaying.
Mm-hmm. It's the femininity being wiped away from their lives.
Yeah.
Or, right there. Or perhaps right. we're just reading too much symbolism into this.
Maybe
they
just think
it
looks
dilapidated.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think they probably think just that it
looks
cool.
Well, it's very old
school.
No,
but I think they think about things like
making
that.
Making the coffee by hand.
Yep. Oh, and he's adjusting his little bow tie like the woman would
yeah.
do.
In their little house. The house that Jack built.
Yep. Aww. Oh, nicely done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aww.
So...
See, now that's also a very female thing to do when females, you know, sort of the stereotype is that when females get upset, they clean.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, what he used to do, but now he's more in touch with his male side.
Yeah.
Well, now he just wants to be dirty.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Notice this almost sexual way that he was touching his jaw. You know, there is an analogy between fighting and sex in this.
Yeah. Fire, passion.
Yeah.
It's all anybody like does actually. That's all people think about in order to like make themselves feel alive. Even back to the cancer patient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And look at the blood all over his teeth.
He just swallows it down. Ew.
Yeah.
And actually he does it so well that it makes me like remember the sensation of like swallowing blood, you know? It's just so gross. Irony.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty macho.
And the way the transition is done from the brightly fluorescently lit front room into this dark and gritty back room, you know, there's an actual transition happening here, you know, and then you've also got the music that suddenly comes in. So it's transitioning into this very male space, transitioning from the cleaner, purer, above ground person, and they actually go down into a basement.
Right, yep, down below.
Delving down into your subconscious again.
Oh, I love it. This is a really great shot, too, of just like following them all walking down there.
Yeah.
It just commands a lot of presence.
Yeah.
And the camera angles are really well done, really dynamic.
Nice use of opening the door in order to cover up the fact that they were actually in a completely different location.
Right, yep. Completely different.
Yeah. Sorry to ruin it for you, all you out there in film grokland.
That's how movies work.
Yeah.
Most of the time,
these
aren't real places.
Yeah, they're like several places combined together.
Or some built location.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry,
I didn't hear that. What was that?
So before, you know, obviously long before I saw this movie, I knew that line.
And
I recognize the importance of that line because it's so simple and yet so great.
Right.
Because it's like, let me reiterate this for you. Let me make this clear. You do not talk about it. What else do you don't do? You don't talk about it.
We're only just perpetuating this because we really want you to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that whole like, tell somebody they can't do something and all they want to do is do it, you know?
Yeah. Right.
If they really didn't want people to talk about Fight Club, they wouldn't have said anything at all.
And the men are removing all aspects of potential femininity, wedding rings, the shoes, the nice shoes their wives probably picked out for them.
But I think it's also because those things could be weapons and they could get in the way. You could hit someone with a ring.
Yeah, but there's the reason and then there's the other
reason.
Connotation.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the reason and there's the reason.
Yes. And notice, you know, despite the fact that this is supposed to be regular guys, a lot of these guys are actually pretty cut. Which,
oh, yeah.
As a woman, I appreciate that fact.
The sound effects in the fighting are so well recorded. I'm not really sure who did the sound design for this film, but it's just, you know.
Is that Paul Rudd?
No, I don't think so.
Paul Rudd.
Okay.
But I see the similarity.
Yeah. And then there's.
And then you see him in real life. That's my favorite. It's like seeing the people in real life. And that little, that little look.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And he's got the little flower.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But if only all men had something like this, they felt a little empowered.
And notice the feminized
about.
Man in the background, the feminized naked man.
The Gucci thing.
Exactly.
Gucci ad thing. Mm-hmm. Articulate, Heidi, please.
Oh, which star would you fight? William Shatner. It's interesting because this is before Shatner resurrected his career again.
Yeah.
Right. You know, with Has-Been and Boston Legal. So
I love how they're like taken in the bus, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Notice how he only bumps into Edward Norton's character when he pushes through. That's another interesting note.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love just like the really simple how they just have like the floor matted with broken up cardboard boxes, you know, to like absorb the blood.
Yeah. Right. And he's watching so proudly as Tyler Durden, who is really him, is having this fight.
Yep.
And masculine and.
Which means he's actually fighting twice as much.
Right.
As he thinks he is, actually, every night.
And yet he's winning.
Yeah.
And there's this whole Tyler Durden watching him and this very sexual pose that he's being forced into, this very sexual submissive pose. And Tyler is watching and there's a very sexual homoerotic element to it.
But it makes sense why, you know, even more so why he is so respected among these men, because he's fighting twice as much. He's kicking ass. He's getting his ass kicked. But he's like right out there twice as much as everybody else.
Right. Yeah. And.
New guy. Uh-oh.
Yeah. And he's directing everyone.
Sometimes Tyler spoke for me. There's a little giveaway.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I actually read something the other day about toothbrushes, like this just made me think of it, that you don't necessarily need to change your toothbrush after you've been sick, like that's just kind of like a rumor, just like cleaning it off with like hot water and toothpaste or soap is just fine.
I never realized you needed to clean it off when, oh God, that tooth thing. Ugh.
See, again, you know, when this movie came out, it was stuff like this and the bare knuckle boxing that made it not the kind of movie that I or my, you know, young girlfriends would want to go see.
Interesting. Speaking of primitivism, rotary phone.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Taking it back.
Yeah.
Oh, Marla.
And she's using a push button phone.
But see, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think they would have used a phone like earlier at the phone booth thing. I think they would have done that no matter what, even if they made it now.
Right. Yeah. Just like in Juno when she has the little, you know, rotary hamburger phone. That was like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. If they want that kind of look, they will go for it.
Yeah. And she's so interestingly sexy and she's so vulnerable in this scene. Granted, she's vulnerable because she's taken a shit ton of pills, but vulnerable nonetheless. And she's vulnerable because he's so masculine and now he's the one in control of the relationship.
Right.
Right.
Yep. It's flipped.
So.
But of course he's less interested now.
Mm-hmm. Well, he thinks he's not interested, but in fact, he is.
He is. That's what happens. He's really going to go over there.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'm just going out, and the phone is gone. And then the next thing is this very interestingly shot sex scene.
Reminds me of like a Bjork video.
They use the Matrix technology to shoot this, actually.
Yeah. Oh.
So, but it's very hallucinatory and hallucinogenic. Not that I would know.
Right, because he's having a memory of it because it really happened.
An insomniac memory.
Yep.
Gross. Condoms.
Filthy.
Well, and also think of the primal masculinity it shows to use 4 condoms in one night.
Yeah.
The scene reads completely different.
When you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you feel really bad for her, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Because he's just...
Right. What are you doing here?
Yeah. Which makes it seem like I fucked you. Shouldn't you have left already?
Oh.
Yeah. Like, get out of my house, you dumb, you know, slut.
Yeah.
But she loves it.
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of like... What is that book? It's like the men's version of The Rules, where it's basically like treat a woman like shit and she'll be yours forever is sort of the general message of it. But
it's kind of horrible, but... It's kind of true.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, yeah. Even if you're like a super, super strong, kind of like abrasive kind of woman like Marla. I mean, at least that's what she wants to appear to be.
Yeah.
But I would hope it's not true for all women. It's true for a lot of women, but there are definitely a lot of women who, you know, are strong enough not to take that.
Sure.
So you've got to wonder if he just walked around the house and came back as Tyler Durden, came back to the phone and his Tyler Durden.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I love that she has the cord wrapped around her neck and it's like this total, like, you know, desperate, you know, just kind of suicidal, ridiculous theatricality of her.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the things I love so much about this movie is everybody is so theatrical. Like, everybody's so extreme and big and bold. And
except for Edward Norton's character until the end.
But he's definitely a caricature of the emasculated man, you know, who's kind of pathetic and has no one in his life. And
this reads completely differently, again, if you know that who she's seeing is actually Edward Norton's character.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you don't know the twist ending, you think that she is like this crazy slut, you know what I mean, who doesn't care. But in fact, she is more of a person. She does care.
Yeah.
Well, of course she does, too, because I think she, you know, whoever Edward Norton, Tyler Durden hybrid person, I mean, that's the one person she relates to in the whole world.
Right.
There's something so Bonnie and Clyde about them together.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm now seeing the romantic comedy edit of this, which would be the love triangle.
The love triangle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I may have to actually sit down and do that.
Yeah. It would be epic.
But look at, he also takes care of her.
Yeah.
Which, quite frankly, is like a primal, you know, need for women that they want a man to take care of them, basically, you know.
Gosh, I just really love that robe. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh.
It definitely adds to the homoerotic tension
between
them.
I've never seen anything so feminine look so masculine in my life.
It's funny because he's, you know, enraged in jealousy that Tyler fucked her, even though he doesn't think that he wants to.
Right. It's because he's so compartmentalized. This poor man.
Such a great line. And they replaced it. That line replaced, I want to have your abortion, which the MPAA insisted be deleted. And he said, sure, but you have to take whatever else I put in. So, one of the best lines ever.
Yeah, she invaded your support group and your home because you wanted her there.
Right, exactly.
Man up.
No, I think as far as like this feminine robe on Brad Pitt, I think the reason why it doesn't come off as ridiculous is because how he wears it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
yep,
his demeanor is extremely masculine, yep, and cool. Yep. So, yep, he could be wearing, yeah, a clown costume and still be,
oh,
cool.
Yeah.
And
oh,
hot.
I want to see him in a clown, yeah, costume. Aw.
Yeah, you think none of that would have, yeah, happened. So it's interesting. He thinks he's working his abs, which in fact he is from the screaming going on, but he's, right, working it in an entirely different way.
It's got to be so weird to be like completely involved in something, but have part of you also be completely irritated about it.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
Strange concept.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, he's just fully, fully crazy in that he wants both sides of himself to have her. He doesn't want the one side to have her.
Right.
And, and not the other.
Well, and I think he also gets, like, he doesn't like this idea, again, of, like, this female, like, invading the space. It's not even some, I think it's, part of him is jealous of Tyler having Marla, but part of him is jealous of Marla having Tyler.
Right.
You know, taking away his boy.
Well, and then there's this peeping part, and my God. And didn't Tyler Durden just offer her to him, or offer
yeah,
for,
yeah,
him to come into the situation? And he can't clean the house, so he's cleaning his teeth. The queen is their slave. That is fascinating.
I agree with that, actually. I think that's a pretty profound idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smoking at his desk.
Yeah.
And in, like, this modern society, you know, if you would have saw that, like, 40 years ago,
it would have been totally normal.
Yeah, it would have been totally normal.
Yeah. And he just blows by the woman there. And here's the thing is, he leaves and he hears them having sex. Did he actually come home, call her to meet him at home and start having sex?
Right.
And notice this. As soon as he gets on the phone, the screaming,
yep,
stops.
Right.
And then here's a little mystery. Oh, Tyler did this to me to push me over the edge.
Right.
You know, there's that side story.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
oh, Edward Norton pulls this off really. See, Edward Norton can actually play the sort of wounded man child very well.
Oh yeah, he's an incredible actor. He could play, yeah, anything.
Yeah,
he really could.
It's, yeah, interesting. I had seen Brad Pitt in Interview with a Vampire and really hated him in that. And to this day, I think he was terribly miscast in it.
I think everybody was except for Kirsten Dunst.
Actually, I think that Tom Cruise really pulled off his role, but that's beside the point.
Yeah,
that's
beside,
yeah,
the point.
But almost. In
I don't know if I need
way.
To get into this.
Yeah,
well, this will be a whole other discussion.
Yeah, but this is the first movie I think I liked Brad Pitt in, because I think I had not, yeah, seen another Brad Pitt movie until this.
Really? You didn't see Legends of the Fall?
Yeah, Legends,
oh, no,
of the Fall.
No, I did not see Legends of the Fall.
Oh,
that
I've seen
was
it like
his
300
big
times.
Movie.
Was, yeah. Oh.
Or The River Runs Through It.
Yes, nope. I was just going to say those were the movies.
Thelma and Louise.
Never. I saw
he was
Thelma
at the
and
peak
Louise,
of his
but he was just a.
Legends of the
blip.
Fall.
Yeah.
Tristan. Ugh.
Oh, my gosh.
And again, yeah, more for another time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's kind of playing off that image at this point in this movie, because he,
yeah,
had that image out there as this, you know, gorgeous,
and
sexy
man
slippers. In the world. The fuzzy, yeah, slippers. So I think that's definitely why he was cast in this movie, because he,
yeah,
already had that image in real life.
Yeah, and he now feels like he's been set up by Tyler, which, as a matter of fact, he kind of was.
Yeah. Tyler and Marla were never in the same room. I love this,
yeah,
dress. It's kind of like old.
Yeah.
She kind of looks like
dress.
A zombie ragdoll right,
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Getting more and more feminine.
And it's interesting because she's talking about their sex and he's steadfastly ignoring her and then treating her badly. And she doesn't understand why he's doing it.
Yeah.
and that's how she's feeling.
Yeah.
And
with her cigarette there.
Yeah. And he's flipped out because she's hitting on him, and yet he clearly left her in media res, for lack of a better term.
Well, and there's also the issue of, you know. God.
And she just tosses her cigarette onto the floor. Enter Tyler.
Yep. Don't mention me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's probably a smart idea. You don't want to come off sounding like a nut job.
Yeah.
We.
Yeah. And she's right, although we don't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't even know why I'm laughing at her. It's just really funny.
Yeah.
You have to sort of wonder if he really does love her, or if he really just really was fascinated and kind of sexually obsessed with her.
I think he kind of does love her.
I think he kind of does love
her,
too.
I mean, even like in the end, you know, when they're together and like the city's falling apart. I think it is. I think a lot of it is like this twisted modern male and this twisted modern female, like somehow still finding that kind of connection.
Yeah,
right. Well,
those abs. Sorry.
But for most of this movie, though, I feel like, you know, she really is just a sexual object to him as he explores this, like, primitive side of himself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also a sign that he can't, you know, he can't fully access his masculinity, I think.
But also, I mean, she's just as participatory in that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's how she wants to play it. And I actually, I mean, maybe not even to that extreme, but I actually do know some women who are kind of like a little Marla. You know, not like 100%, obviously.
But it has to do with low self-esteem, though, to let a guy treat you like that.
Yeah, this craving for some sort of power or some sort of, like, position or place. I mean, there's something... to be
sorry
about all that.
The gigantic bag of fat just really does gross me out. Yeah. I'm just...
Oh, this is the worst part, though.
Oh!
God.
God.
That is so wrong.
Yeah.
See, this is what happens when girls watch this movie.
We get grossed out.
But you know what? So many things don't gross me out. That fat grosses me out.
I think it's meant to be disgusting, really.
I think it probably grosses guys out, too. I'm gonna go so far as to say I think it grosses them out as well.
Or
well,
maybe they just don't want to admit that it grosses them out.
We should listen to the male version and see what they
think
about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Should we untie Serge and ask him if it grosses him out?
Yeah, we'll untie him later. It's the girl's time.
Which is... hilarious, though, like this idea of like something that brings ultimate cleanliness also is like, you know, their symbolism for like the ultimate destruction as well.
But through discussion, they're cleansing the world of credit card companies.
Yep.
So. Oh, gosh, the lie scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the fighting isn't even as bad as some of this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
This is just like.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him just sitting around doing this to himself?
The homoeroticism, you know, kissing the hand first. You know, you could.
And you know, what makes this scene so disturbing is what a great job Edward Norton is doing right now selling this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you know, he's just sitting there doing it to himself.
Right.
Which is actually, I mean.
Even more horrible.
He's got some cojones, you know?
Yeah.
He really does.
Cojones or psychoses?
Maybe a little bit of both.
And notice the power animal is her looking absolutely ravishing. Marla looks ravishing in that one shot.
Yeah. Right.
And that shows how he's still not masculine enough because she breathes out the smoke and he coughs.
Right. I mean, this is going down to the whole principle of the generation, you know?
Right, like exactly.
These fatherless boys.
Mm-hmm. And... And it's interesting, this whole, it's almost a, it's, you could argue even that this is a call for Satanism in a way. You know, God abandoned us, therefore let's be as destructive and satanic as possible.
Well, it's certainly very nihilistic.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, I mean, I don't even, yeah, I think it's a, so, like, yeah, he has the same scar, obviously, because you just did it to yourself.
Right.
But I think it's chaos, you know, it's the belief in nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there's no heaven, there's no hell, there's nothing but us right now and what we're doing.
Right.
This is all that matters.
And again, that goes back to the whole primitive thing of I alone exist. There's no one else. I don't have to answer to anyone.
Right.
I can do whatever I want.
I'm an island.
Yeah.
But I think at the end,
you're one step closer to hitting bottom. That's so much more prophetic.
Pull up your pants. Don't really.
Yeah.
I know. Selling back the rich women, they're fat.
Yeah,
it is pretty,
exactly.
I mean, it is clever.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't realize that it was so far in the movie before all like the guys started moving into the house.
Right. Yeah. That's really, it's the 2/3 of the film switch. But he seems so much more comfortable in his skin now, and we'll see that even more in a minute.
Well, and this is the first big reveal, because we see what he does now with himself in the office, and this is what puts the seed in our brains to realize this could have been happening all along.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a total Tyler Durden moment.
Yep.
And it looks like he's been learning from Tyler, but, you know, it's a muted Tyler. But it's Tyler nonetheless.
Right. This is what other people see when he thinks Tyler is someone else.
And notice that he now has a scar on his eyebrow on the flip
side.
Which is the other, you know, Tyler has it on the other side. And so,
which is
like
what he would see in a mirror.
Sides. Yeah.
Ooh, good eye, Laura.
Yeah. Nice one. Nice one.
I was proud.
And he's so pleasant and yet psychotic and scary.
I kind of want to know, like, who he is, like, post Fight Club.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Like, who does he become, like, after this film? What does he do? I mean, you know, I guess part of me doesn't want to know, but part of me would just be very interested.
Yeah,
could they actually have a relationship after of that?
Fight Club 2, Electric Boogaloo. Wait until the sequel here.
They move out to the country, you know, get a farm, some
have
goats.
2.5 kids.
Oh, she's stealing Meals on Wheels.
Oh, yeah. I love her.
Yeah.
Aww. She stole him a meal on wheels. It's love. it's true love.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that he's the one who goes and does this. You know, he doesn't defer to his Tyler Durden personality.
Yeah, right.
Because whenever it comes to really connecting with her or really having a conversation with her, it's always him.
Right. Yeah. Because Tyler Durden is the primitive,
right,
you know, violent side of him.
Yeah.
But obviously he does care, you know, or he wouldn't have gone and like given into her delusions of breast cancer.
Yeah.
Right. Which is obviously a ploy to seduce him.
And it's interesting because he's just not. And
aww. Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
Let me know when you're your other personality.
Yeah. What is the myself, myself, myself behind him written on the wall? Did you notice that? Just as he walks by, the graffiti is just myself, myself, myself over and over again, which is,
aww.
My name is Robert Paulson.
His name is Bob.
Krispy Kremes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see the end of it. Self, self, self.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Aww. Oh.
Fight Club.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to talk about it.
I'm not supposed to talk about it, but oh.
I I'm the president.
Yeah.
I'm not just a card-carrying member. I'm also a client.
And he is so... And Bob is so... I mean, Meatloaf plays someone who draws you in so much. He is so lovable in this role, you know, and there's a special type of actor it takes to do that. Sorry, loving on Meatloaf here. Love Bat Out of Hell. Loved Bat Out of Hell too. Love him in this.
And he would do anything for love.
Meatloaf. But he can't do that.
Especially not in this film.
Yeah.
But I love that whole, oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. Those jiggly titties. That is like a little too much for me. Oh.
Ugh. Yeah, but at the same time, wrestling. Man, you know, and it's funny, all of these men are super cut and then there's him.
And then, of course, the juxtaposition going from, you know, he hugs Bob, they're having this really tender conversation to cut to beating the crap out of each other.
But the headlock is almost a hug and then there's this hug right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that little realization, though. He's like, I've never seen you. And he's like, I go Tuesdays and Thursdays. He's like, I go Saturdays. And I don't think that maybe it hadn't dawned on him yet that the people do it other days. Like, he probably thought Saturday's the only day. It's my day. I started it.
Yeah. Right. But was he as Tyler doing other days?
Right. Probably.
Yeah, but Meatloaf or Bob would have recognized him.
But he could have started him up.
Yeah, and then just not gone.
That's a great haircut. Here we go.
Yeah.
Let's roll out some propaganda.
You know, and one of the things that this movie shows, which I think makes it even more relevant today than it was in 1999, is the allure of the terrorist cell and how when you feel at sea, when you're in a generation where you've been abandoned by men, you don't have any male role models, and you're suddenly given this male group to bond with a charismatic leader who is in some ways taking on the father role and is teaching you to be a man, how teaching you to blow up buildings and whatever else.
Which is what they do, blow up buildings.
Right. How it can be compelling. And I think this is, and I think, you know, moment of political stuff and then I'll get off it. I think this is the one thing that people are missing in the whole terrorist equation is how in a lot of ways it's just an attempt to belong to something.
Oh yeah. Right. I've been nodding the entire time you've been speaking.
No, me too.
I wish you could audibly hear a nod.
Yeah. It is weird how oddly prophetic this is considering 9/11 happened just a few years after this movie came out.
But you know, there was tons of terrorism happening during the time came out, before it, you know, which it also hits on.
Yeah. And this is just so, how sexy is that? Okay. Yep. Anyway,
the lean.
Yeah. That's a very sexy pose for any man, but especially
one
for him.
In like a cropped lady's sweater.
Yeah. Oh. And notice his shirt says sock it to me. Yeah, it's symbolic for what is about to come next. And he's so compelling.
And he's got this army of guys down there, you know, but they're all holding back because their leader didn't say to do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, now he's got the gun.
Yeah.
This just got real.
Uh-huh. And he's holding, notice how he holds the narrator back.
Right, himself.
Right.
Yeah. Because Tyler is the person who has to take command of the situation.
But it only makes these guys respect him more.
Yeah. And notice the semi-orgasmic, extremely, again, fighting in sexuality.
Yeah, the joy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and plus he knows. I mean, he knows if he fought back against this guy, he would kill him.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, he's choosing this. You know, this is something he's willingly accepting.
Yeah.
Until.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, gross.
Oh, and it's blood. And that's, but notice what he's showing. He's showing violence isn't even necessary. You
right.
can just yep. throw your blood all over a fake man like this in order to get him to cave.
Well, you can't fight crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people don't know what to do with that. He's like, I'm going to vomit my own blood on you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, he's even thinking it. Awesome.
And, yeah, and that thanks for coming. You know, that's just so...
And they carry him.
Yeah.
Like their savior.
Uh-huh. He's even in the cross
position.
And he's
being carried yep. by himself, so he's really only one guy.
Yeah.
Cross legs.
He crosses his own leg. Is where it starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an interesting and compelling...
I think that is Paul Rudd, by the way. I think Paul Rudd is in this movie.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, we can look it up on IMDb later.
Yeah, starting a fight and losing.
Yeah. Well, just starting a fight is hard because no one is willing yep. to fight, you know? Because
they're all a bunch of cowards.
Yeah. It.
But with a priest. Come on, dude. Yeah.
It's interesting that the priest is the one with the least veneer of civilization.
Oh.
Yeah.
There he goes.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's but you know, masculinity, you know, if they're defining masculinity as fighting, the fact that he won't fight. These people won't fight means they're not real men.
According to this movie.
Yeah.
But it's also perpetuating that. You know, like saying you'll lose is you're giving this total stranger their masculinity,
right.
their power, and it spreads.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I like later on when he realizes that he's been traveling all over the place starting other fight clubs. You
yeah.
know?
Right.
I love how threatening he see, and this is the moment where he is as sexy as Tyler Durden.
Yep.
Because he is full on channeling Tyler.
Well, he's confident and he's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, he's not just being manipulative. He's being very, very smart and calculating.
Yeah. And it's interesting because he's still maintaining the narrator's delivery to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not doing full-on Tyler Durden impersonation, but he is, there is a sense of Tyler. And again, 1999, the CRTs in the background.
I love it. Here it is. I am Jack's smirking revenge.
Yeah.
This is brilliant.
Yeah, and it's smart, and I've got to wonder how many other people pulled it off.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah. And notice the magazine he lands on says speed, power, heat.
Oh, that breakaway glass.
Yeah.
You know, not to ruin it for anyone, but that is plastic actually. And they just add the glass sound effects.
Yeah.
Not to ruin this for anyone, but about 95% of sounds you hear in movies are added.
Yeah. You know, one of the things at the beginning, toward the beginning when they...
Yeah, for some reason.
For some reason.
Nice. And at the time, it just seems like it's because he's taking another evolutionary
right.
step. And then later we learn. But... Now, you know, here's the thing is at the beginning when these guys are talking about how I've never been in a fight, I was in fights when I was a kid. I was in fist fights. Maybe it's just because I grew up in a bad town. I mean, but
I don't know. I actually have talked about this with some people because I used to get in like really bad fights with my older sister. I mean, we were scrappy, you know, I would assume brothers are.
Yeah.
You know, in a similar way. But I've talked to a lot of people as I've grown up and realized that that wasn't normal.
Hmm.
I thought it was, but.
Yeah, me too.
Apparently.
I got into fights in the neighborhood. Yeah. And this, such a great shot. Oh, man. And it's the ultimate office revenge fantasy. Think about it, you know? And this is how Tyler and I were able to, you know.
The leader.
Yeah, exactly. No. which is just another way of.
But I like it, yeah, just like any little teeny tiny thing you can do to just cause a little anarchy, you know?
Yeah.
Pee in some soup.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, you know, destroying TV antennas, not really something that would have much of an effect now. You'd have to destroy the cable hookups.
Right.
Well, and you could destroy it if they have DirecTV or dish.
Yeah,
you could go to the video store, question mark.
Oh,
there
man.
Was the video store.
The videos.
Oh, I love that. All this pranking. There are actual organizations
that do
pranks
this.
Like
yeah.
this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, on a certain level, but that's what it spirals out of control so fast. But on a certain level, you know, it's not really, it's not all that harmful, but it empowers them, you know?
Yeah. Some of these pranks are not harmful, and then some of them are, like
right.
this one.
This is pretty harmful, and that's harmful.
Yeah. I like this scene between them, though. Like, they haven't really had a scene like this in quite a while where they've just been the two of them talking.
Yeah. Apparently, they both really hated VW bugs at the time, so bashing in the VW bug made them happy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I don't know what their anger against VW bugs are, but
I think because... also it's the height of consumerism,
right?
You know,
right. I love these are fantastic.
Yeah, it's the commodity because they're taking something that wasn't icon and repurposing it and reselling it. You know. Mm. So, it's excrement catapult. Oh. performance art. Missing monkeys found shave. That's and notice the big Apple logo. Apple was kind of Apple in 1999. Apple
it was not very popular.
It was considered on its deathbed. People did not think so. It's interesting. The Apple logo is there, and it's so iconic.
I had
brand
one.
Now
I've had apples all my life.
Me too.
Please give me something free, Steve Jobs. Heidi Hilliker here.
Steve Jobs, I've been using your stuff for 21 years,
and we had a Lisa.
You win.
Well, I learned how to type on that Apple II computer.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, this is interesting because it's a much more terroristic way of giving this man his life back is what he's kind of doing.
Right. And oh my gosh, that narrator Jack character is so uncomfortable here. I don't think up to this point you've really seen him this uncomfortable with Tyler.
Yeah.
Like this is where it starts. Like, you know. He's approaching the downward side of the hill.
Yeah, exactly. This is the hitting bottom point, do you think? Or do you think he hit bottom when they were breaking up the cars?
Oh, no. I think it's either here or maybe a little bit later.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when he's breaking the cars, he's still riding off that high of getting out of his job and everything.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But this is where it starts getting, like, really disturbing.
Right.
It's a little too personal.
And
right.
And then later with Bob, that's, I think, when...
Yeah, well, that's the rock bottom.
That's bottom.
That's
yeah.
the rock bottom.
You're right,
dies.
Yeah.
And he like, mutilates Jared Leto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the rock bottom. Aww.
And the interesting thing about this film is you could say that it's glorifying violence, which on the surface it looks like it is, but I actually don't think that it is.
No, I don't really actually think it is either. I think it's talking. I think it speaks a lot to like the thrill of something, but how like the thrill is short lived, and how you know reality will always set in,
right.
And that there are consequences and there are people involved.
Yeah,
people
absolutely.
Are real people with feelings
right.
and lives. And
it's not just about you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how bored you are and how alive you don't feel.
Right.
Right.
You know? But the interesting thing about this is, as he points out, this is Run, Forrest, Run. I wonder how long people are going to remember what that means. The interesting thing about this is that he is, in some ways, giving this guy his life back who was stuck in a dead-end job. And I don't think he was doing it to be funny. I think he was doing it because he, you know, that was what he really wanted to do, give this man a golden moment.
Right.
Right.
But at the same time, he's starting to realize he's really, like, sinking too deep.
Yeah, exactly.
No bullets. Ah, homework assignments. When I was in school, we didn't get homework assignments like this.
No.
Go out and destroy something.
Go out and blow up a computer store. Yeah, that was never a homework assignment for me either.
But I like the idea, you know, I wouldn't really consider myself any sort of like Hindi or anything, but there's like the goddess Kali, mm-hmm. and basically she's the destroyer, mm-hmm. you know, and she's very often...
Continue.
Yeah. But it's something that's brought up often in that faith, because without destruction, there can't be any new life. You know, there can't be creation. Like, to destroy is to create.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's a principle that goes back, obviously, you know, to the beginning of mankind.
And it's in the Bible, too.
Yeah.
Where God's telling them they must, you know, annihilate certain groups of people in order to start over.
But yeah, it is.
Flood.
I mean, the flood. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you got
the flood,
there is, but it's a true concept. I mean, you can't always, you know, you got to get rid of something to buy something new. I mean, even on that simple consumerist, you know, level.
Yeah.
And they just really embrace that in this film. You know, it definitely makes you think about it.
This interesting, weird, intimate moment. Oh, you know, she's Chloe died.
Chloe,
and it was the smart move on her part. And he's so earnest, but this is
but it's
an entirely
honest.
Yeah, but he thinks he's talking about her relationship with someone else, not their relationship.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
It's
you're crazy. I think she's trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's why he's pounding from the basement. It's like, get out of that conversation.
The basement being the deepest part of your psyche.
Yeah.
Right.
And and this whole and
he's shut the door.
And it's interesting that Tyler, the symbology of Tyler being in the basement.
Yep.
Yeah.
And feeding him, you know, what to say, mm-hmm. what to do.
Bunker. That's totally Paul Rudd. Sorry, guys.
No, it's
not.
Definitely not. It's not his profile.
It's not him.
No.
I would bet money on it.
I would, too.
I think he just looks like... I do think he looks similar.
Yeah. It's this weird Spartan thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Manly.
Yeah. A double feature of this and 300, I think, might be the key to the male psyche. Perhaps.
And it would be hours of enjoyable eye candy.
That's true. Perhaps it
it's
might.
It's totally Paul Rudd,
it
guys.
It's not Paul Rudd.
Rudd.
Yeah, the mouth is all wrong.
And the nose.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I always get Paul Rudd confused with this other guy named Ian Bailey, who is in Band of Brothers. That's who that is.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
There you go. But they do look similar. I mean,
they have a similar look. Yeah. And he is now channeling Tyler Durden, you know, but Tyler is becoming more a part of him. The homoerotic thread in this is so deep. Upcoming is one of my favorite moments, really.
I love that Bob is number two. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, he got right in there. There were people who do in Fight Club a lot longer, but they're not on the step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, Bob loves him.
Yeah. But this moment.
No. And what is Bob thinking? Ready?
Yeah.
Ready? What is this?
Yeah. You know, and there's this one, that one moment where he has that.
I always love when people shave their hair in real life, like in front of a camera. Yeah. Because you got to do it that one time. And
yeah,
might as well.
Can't really mess it up. You know, you've got to like really commit. Can't start laughing.
Yeah. And the way people keep looking down from the window. Oh, yeah.
You're too blonde.
Yep. But again, you know, one of the aspects to wanting to belong, there's this hazing ritual. It's a hazing ritual that happens in frats. It's a hazing ritual that happens in frats and came from the military. Because frats post-World War II... as men were involved enrolling due to the GI program, that's when hazing began in frats, and it was something that they had carried over from their military units. And once again, this is a hazing like is done in military units, like is done in frats. It's and it's a way to make people feel like they work to win something important.
Yep, they belong, they earned it. And then they get to dole it out to someone else.
Right.
It's like if you can put up with it, then you get to do that to someone else.
It's a great psychological tool, and it's a psychological bonding tool because everyone went through the same thing.
Yep.
Right.
And you were the ones who survived.
They also want obedience. Bush. That's why the military does it.
Well, that's true too, but it's the... You know, is Bush really the beer of a man, or is it just that...
Well, I think it's just because it's cheap. It's low maintenance. You know what I mean? It's like Tyler Durden smokes basic cigarettes. That's like probably the cheapest, grossest kind of cigarette a person could possibly buy.
And also probably they could afford it for the film. Maybe
I'm thinking it's more
brands.
For the film. Really?
I don't know. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if they even talk about that in the book because I think that it actually enhances their characters because it's so low maintenance. They could have went with Pabst or something like that too.
Yeah, why not PBR or Milwaukee's Best, you know, the Beast?
Right, because Bush is grossest.
well, Bush isn't even necessarily, that's the thing, is it's kind of like it's such a bland beer, you know? It's not even, and maybe that's it because there is no symbolism or.
But it's just boring, it's unassuming, it's cheap, you know what I mean? There's no glamour,
There's no even the hipster glamour of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Right, which didn't even exist back then, though. I mean, that's a more modern.
No, it did. In 1996, hanging out in bars, PBR was the big hipster drink.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really know about that because they weren't really hipsters where I came from. Like, people in Michigan, people just drink PBR, you know? Like, that's just like a commonly consumed beverage.
Yeah. Well, PBR was like, it was more the punk rock beverage in 96, but you can talk about hipsterism as evolving from punk
rock.
Right,
yeah. Well, and a lot of other random scenarios.
Yeah. And every single man in those jackets is a Fight Club man.
Yep.
So. Meatloaf. Sorry.
What does it say? End crime in what?
In our time. Take back the city.
And so many of the men are wearing identical wigs in this scene, you know, because their hair right? is shaved. Yeah. But and here's the moment. And yeah. and the wigs are coming off.
Gosh, they're so cheesy looking, too.
Yeah,
they're exactly. like the best cheesy wigs you could possibly buy.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
This is also shot incredibly well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because you have the neon lighting, because now we are not in, you know, the Fight Club world. This right, neon washed out lighting.
Because we're in the man's world, like the oppressive, you know, world of society, like the office. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what they use every time they're in an office. It's yeah. this washed out green, like this sort of pink yeah. green yeah. lighting. Yeah.
Gosh, it's so intimidating, though. We're everywhere is basically yeah. what he's saying. Yeah.
And we're everywhere, but also it's like the cry of the low-wage man.
Yeah.
Right. The man
yeah.
who is, you know, middle management or below.
Which is another thing I think this actually hits on a little bit, is like the dying middle class in America, because that yeah. really, you know, started, you know, the 90s was really when that, like, that concept started, I think, coming to the surface, because, uh-huh. you know, there was a little bit of a flourish in the 80s, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden 90s, and now, obviously, I mean, the middle class in America really is just falling to the wayside.
Yeah. And once again, inflamed sense of rejection. He is feeling like he's not a part of this anymore. You know, he's right. feeling, but
because he's pulling
and yet
away,
he's creating it.
Right. Because, but he's also pulling away at the same time. It's very interesting that, like, as one half of him is diving deeper and deeper and deeper into this chaos, the other half of him is pulling further and further out.
Right, exactly.
Right. He's sort of maybe realizing how crazy it all really is.
Well, yeah. And here he goes. He's just going to fall into it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's as if Tyler Durden is coming out right yep. now. You
yeah,
know?
This he's Tyler Durden right now, even though he thinks he's...
But this
yeah.
is where the rock bottom starts, because this is where he starts realizing he's losing control.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is, in a way, this is like a rape scene with lots of men watching.
Yeah.
You know, sorry to keep hitting on the sexuality, but there is a sexuality to this. At the beginning of the scene, there's a man sort of stroking his chest as he watches this. And then, you know, everyone's simultaneously drawn in and feels the need to turn away.
Right. Look at their faces. They're so disgusted and disturbed.
But yeah. yet enraptured. And that little shrug he gives, that's really a Tyler Durden shrug there. And note, Tyler has... Tyler is the one, it's their roles are reversed for
yeah.
a moment.
Right.
The lines become blurred. Oh, teeth. It's nice to have them. Not nice to lose them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the moment where the narrator is more in control, just for a moment.
And it's becoming more and more evident.
Yeah.
This is a great scene, too, in the car.
Recycle your yeah. animals.
Because clearly he's the one driving.
I wonder how much of this is actually happening out loud, like how much the guys in the back are hearing.
Mm-hmm. I think all of it's happening out loud because they keep responding to him. He says Project Mayhem, says, you do not talk about
Well,
Project
they're responding
Mayhem.
To Edward Norton.
Yeah. yeah. It's so interesting.
I don't know if they're hearing both.
Yeah, it's interesting when he says Project Mayhem has moved out of the basement. Tyler has moved out of the basement of, you know, the subconscious.
Right,
and really.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a pointer right there.
Wake up.
Hello.
Yeah, here's both.
Paint a self-portrait.
Yeah. Build a house. But it's like, it's great that they know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if all of the dialogue is happening out loud, though, or if just some of the dialogue is happening around.
But I do think it's interesting that, like, he's in this kind of, like, life and death situation. Like, what would you think of, like, right before you die? And he thinks of Marla.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if she really...
Well, but he thought of Fight Club first, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's thinking of the things that define him.
Right.
Yeah. And Marla. She's one of them.
I wonder if men think about the Marla narrator relationship as much as we do, or if
I don't know. I was just thinking that.
Yeah,
but I mean,
because we care about her feelings,
it would be interesting. But the point is like there is a real point to her character and to their relationship, or else it wouldn't even be in the story.
Right,
right.
They just wouldn't have her at all.
Yeah. And then the actual crash moment.
That's a crash.
Oh, it would be so easy to edit footage from this into a bisexual love triangle film. Like a trailer for a bisexual love triangle film. I think I'm going to have to do that.
I can't wait.
Or a single white female type of thing.
Yeah. Oh, there's a couple of ways you can go with this. Now, someone said that he was dragged out of the driver's side of the car, but that really looks like the passenger side of the car to me.
Well, I don't know. It actually...
I guess...
It does kind of look like
the I guess you're
side,
right.
Actually.
It is the driver's side.
Yeah, because the car flipped over, so it's like mirror image.
Yeah, you're right.
And all this time, you think you've been sleeping.
Yeah.
But you've been flying all over the place.
Yep.
Man.
It's, you know, the interesting part is if you go on the web and look at some of the more fringe sites, as I do, from time to time, just to remind myself of where the center might be, you'll see that there are people who are actually touting this whole, like, survivalist, the world's going to be destroyed in 15 years.
Or 2012.
Yeah, well, Glenn Beck is now selling survivalist meals, you know, get your survivalist meals stocked up for 1 year. Yeah, MREs, essentially.
I mean, I wouldn't lie. I think about it all the time. I mean, this is something that's come up in discussions before, but I believe I'm the prophesized leader of the post-apocalyptic world, so I've been preparing for it, you know?
Okay, well, at least now I know who to talk to.
I got you guys covered. You can come with me.
Awesome. Human sacrifices.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweating and everything. Sweating like men.
But they took a lot of men who don't have that, oh my God, sexy. You know, they didn't insist on just casting pretty boys.
Right.
No, but there's something about all of them that looks a little sexy to me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the shaved heads and the black shirts. I don't know.
Well, it's weird. But like Brad Pitt is obviously the prettiest one there. But Jared Leto is also pretty boring. He's the one who gets his face
beaten.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
And also the prettiest guy there is the fictional one.
Right. Yeah. I swear I'm going to put folders on my desk that say disinformation and mischief.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's just so weird to like go and tell people to not tell you things.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
How does that work?
Well, you tell people to prove that they can keep a secret by even keeping it from you, and that you will test them by asking them to reveal it. Did he... Tyler dumped me.
Yeah.
Notice the connotation there. And meanwhile, they're treating it like a Zen garden there.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're taking pride.
Yeah.
Oh, this, I think this is like the hardest scene between them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's so clearly scared for him, only that doesn't, it doesn't, if you're He's looking at here. It through the original.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's interesting, her freaked outness, if you're watching this from the original, she just seems like a hurt woman. And when you're watching it and know the ending, it's like she figures he's just completely lost his mind, which is not entirely wrong.
No.
It's totally true, actually. He has completely lost his mind.
But only someone who's only hanging on to, you know, a brief morsel of her own mind would really be able to understand a little bit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, and this is the part. Sorry, guys, can't watch this. This is just too disturbing for me. I'm going to keep my eyes closed. I can hear it, but I can't watch the whole.
Oh, God.
Did they say Operation Latte Thunder?
Latte Thunder, yeah. But you didn't have it all worked out, actually.
Yeah, obviously.
Clearly.
Because this is the repercussions of chaos.
Right, exactly.
Right.
This is... I can't even... Sorry, that's the part that I can't look at.
They do... The makeup crew on this movie, I mean, props... Because they do a really good job on everyone. I mean, look at Jared Leto's face. I mean, it's just all the blood and the scars and the wounds. I mean, it's amazing. And the blood is so good in this movie because it's dark.
Yeah, it's not all bright red.
Right.
And it's interesting the way he's taking control and he's taking them to task and they don't quite understand why.
Oh,
yeah.
No, you don't.
Because they so now they must die.
But if you think about it, there is something sort of military about this. You know,
in death, you have your identity. You've done your service.
You died for a cause. It's noble.
You've made people proud.
Yeah, exactly.
You go to Valhalla.
Yeah. And he can't get through to the... At this point, both he and Tyler have lost control of it. Although you could argue that Tyler rides the wave of it, and he just...
Well, I think this... I think to not have control is what Tyler's control is.
Right. You know? I think you're right.
There they are. Yeah. That's right. Start figuring it out, man. It's about time.
Yeah.
Rock bottom is hit. Open your eyes.
Yeah.
I love those old-fashioned boarding passes, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he's wearing, like, Adidas flip-flops, which were really popular, actually, in that era.
Very 90s.
And, you know, the interesting thing is, at that time, those were the boarding passes you got. The whole e-pass thing happened a little later.
Yep.
Yeah, you can print it out like on just a piece
after
of paper
this,
now.
Too, you know?
Yeah.
You are him.
He goes to a town and he knows where the bar is, which I think is.
Right, and they know you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they think that he's testing them, trying to figure out if they'll.
Yeah. Which is just hilarious.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I'd be able to hold that together like that, but maybe it's just because I'm not a dude.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I know you.
Yeah. Like lawyer speak.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, I love that. Yeah. Was Tyler my bad dreamer? Am I Tyler's?
Yes, you
Right, because it goes to that thing. Who's real?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, who is the manifestation? You know, maybe it really is the Edward Norton character and he's the one who rules out at the end.
Yeah. Because you had... But notice how much sexier he is in these scenes, you know, as he and Tyler are becoming one.
Right. Well, and actually, because he's starting to do something that I think is really manly, or what I think is really manly, and that's he's starting to take responsibility.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And I think that, like, from my perspective, that's what it is.
Oh, man.
Welcome back, sir. How you been?
Ooh.
Notice how all of the scars look like vulvas.
They also look like lips, like a kiss.
Well, that's what he did on the hand.
Yeah,
he that's
gave
true.
Him a kiss.
There you go.
Yeah. That. Oh.
Bam.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Oh. Don't go there. Don't go there.
Yeah.
And now his head's shaved too.
Mm-hmm. And, yep, you're right about the eyebrow scar.
Yeah, it's the mirror.
It's funny because that look, as a burner, I must say, that look that he's wearing is a very Burning Man look with the furry jacket and the shaved head and the goggles and the whole nine yards. And he's still not quite willing to...
Ah.
that moment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, for you guys seeing this movie for the first time and not knowing that this was coming, did you figure it out before this moment?
I did not, but my ex-husband figured it out in the first 10 minutes. Because he's a freak. And
I mean, it is one of those things you could just land on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, I don't know. But I did kind of have that little twinge because I had heard those people talking. So I didn't really know. Yeah, but but by the time I got to this point, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what they were talking about.
Yeah. Right. And I like how you have these moments of him talking to an empty chair.
Yeah.
But you know what? Even if you do know, it's still all done incredibly well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And again, I knew, but I still doubted it.
Yeah.
As I watched it.
Oh. Yeah.
Right. See, and here he is. He's trying to purge because he actually cares about her.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to purge that out of his life.
Yeah.
Because when he was distraught and he didn't know what to do, who did he call? He called Marla.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. It's called a fugue state also, mm-hmm. if you are, in fact, someone with multiple personality disorder.
Gosh, the worst part about it, though, would be waking up tired.
Mm.
You know, like thinking you slept, but you didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it happens.
Yeah, that moment of awareness.
Every time you've taken a nap, every time you've slept,
you haven't been.
Yep.
Yeah. The missing days. Notice that he's even dressing more like Tyler now. You know, the sort of like thrift store jacket, the t-shirt. Not as brightly colored, but...
Or flamboyant. Yeah, he's still pretty milquetoast kind of plain.
Yeah. He actually reminds me like... of like a very like kind of like Brave New World kind of wardrobe, you know, like this really kind of like simplistic, no identity.
Yeah, the map is all over Delaware, Pennsylvania, all the different points they've got in there. And he has no way to stop it because everyone thinks he's testing them.
Right.
What a sickening, sickening feeling.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And this is the first time we have a daylight scene where it's not washed out, where it's in full color.
Because he's awake.
Yeah, but it's pretty gray. Still.
I mean, it's definitely gray. Yeah.
But it's not the level of fluorescent washed out that other daytime scenes have been.
Right.
It's actually like that kind of sun where it's like so gloomy, but the sun, for some reason, the light's even brighter.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but this is not neon washed out at all. See, you know, he you're right. He is awake.
Oh my gosh.
The panic.
Yeah.
They do such a brilliant job. As, like, you know, he gets more and more to this, like, end point of really kind of, like, building the climax with all these different characters.
Right.
They could have had one chef nod. No, but they have three in unison, you know?
Yep.
See, it is a little bit of a love story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just figuring that out.
Yeah. Imagine being spectacular in bed and not even knowing any of it.
Yeah.
Only remembering the annoying squeaking as you try to read. Oh. Seven years in Tibet.
Yeah. Brad Pitt movie.
But yeah, you're right. He is now taking an active role, which he did not do before.
Yeah.
Right.
Responsibility.
He's taking action on his own.
Yeah. Yep. He's not creating chaos. He's creating a solution.
Yep. But see, that's ultimately what women want, the whole notion that women want an asshole. It's because assholes are confident.
Right. That's all. Yeah.
And they take charge. Yep. It's not because we like them because they're jerks.
No.
It's because they, you know, the nice guy who's, you know, doesn't do anything.
And doesn't want to look you in the eyes.
Yeah. It's right. Like people want confidence.
Yep.
Yeah.
It preferably like positive, you know,
positive confidence. Exactly. Yes. Take responsibility, take charge. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And again, the whole female need of wanting someone to take care of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like the nice weak guy is not going to take care of you.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's trying so hard.
Yeah. And the guy's looking at him like either this guy is crazy and wasting my time or crazy and dangerous. And either way, I need many people guarding him.
Right.
And the interesting thing is that some of these guys, the other cops, you already recognize because they've been in the background of Fight Club scenes.
Right.
Because they're with him.
Yeah.
I love how he even has orders to his minions to like stop him.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thinking involved there.
Because the Brad Pitt character was always aware that the other side of him wasn't aware.
Right. I don't want my split personalities to work that way.
No. Well,
I'm going to say it right now. I don't want either of them or all of them to be aware of each other.
Well, the other aspect to this is that they all think he is testing them and that he is...
Yeah.
See, exactly.
Yeah.
I am Tyler Durden.
Oh. And again, a gang rape type scene. This is...
Be right there after I take my general's balls.
Yeah.
It is. I don't know, though. Like, I get like the taking the order and following through with what, you know, your superior told you. But at the same time, like assaulting your superior. Like,
yeah, but the whole the
I
whole
think there
club
would be like
based
a fear factor to that. I don't know. But I'd be afraid though of that like psycho crazy person. Like,
yeah. But again, the whole club is based on assaulting each other and creating
and not
chaos.
Having fear,
right.
yeah. not having
so,
fear. Yeah.
So now this just challenges them to work harder to, cut off his balls. So and there is something very symbolic about
right.
that.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just literal. There's a symbolism there.
And I also think it's very symbolic that he spends the last part of the movie without his pants.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's been caught with his pants down.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Quite yep. literally.
And now,
and
like
he's fighting
Marla
for
did,
his balls.
Yeah. And now, like Marla did in the beginning, he's running fearlessly into traffic.
Yeah.
And again, it's the man in fighting in the challenge of fighting with the challenge of adversity.
Just turn around.
Yeah. Now, this is something that, we talked about this before the recording went on. This end sequence really reads very differently in a post 9/11 world than it did pre 9/11.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, granted, even at this time, this was after they had initially tried to blow up the World Trade Center with vans full of explosives in the basement.
Right.
But even so, it reads a lot differently.
Well, it's just disturbing nowadays to watch any building come down after 9/11. I mean, in any movie, to see it crumbling down on itself is. I mean, yes, that's how buildings come down when you blow them up, but still, it just has a lot more resonance now.
We have that moment in our memories.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, the method that they chose in this is actually the van in the basement, which was the initial way that they tried to take down the World Trade Center.
Right.
Gosh, it's just crazy the way the mind can work, that you couldn't know something that you know.
Yeah. And I have to say, watching this even now, I'm full of this tension. Is he going, even though I know how it turns out, I'm full of this, it's captivated me with the tension.
Well, it's just such a well-made film. I mean, ultimately, whether or not you enjoy it, you have to admire the artistry of how it was put together.
Mm-hmm. And, do you notice how Brad Pitt has now transitioned into his 12 Monkeys look and, to a certain extent, his 12 Monkeys demeanor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, not quite crazy enough yet.
Yeah.
No, but I agree with you.
He's got to, turn it up a few notches.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Before, he was all Mr. Cool, and now he's all Mr. Crazy.
Yeah.
I always thought it was weird that they put that moment in the trailer for the film where he's like, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
So just out of context, it looks weird.
They're probably like, oh, this is a great moment. Brad Pitt looks like explosive. Like he's a great actor.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
and also it does touch back because 12 Monkeys came out before this. So it does actually touch the 12 Monkeys thing. It's a callback. Right. Wow, that's a sexy moment.
Yeah, that is.
And that's less sexy.
But it is. The jacket off is one of the, I think, one of the best in cinematic history.
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha.
Ugh.
It's you, man. Stop kicking your own ass.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a silly, crazy shirt, and at the same time, he looks so incredibly masculine in it.
Well, I think that's another
thing.
It's
because of how he wears it.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's not what you wear. It's not how you look. It's who you are. Confidence.
Yeah.
It's the confidence.
It actually reminds me of, so, since this fight scene is going on and we can just watch them be sexy.
I don't know if it's really sexy, well, though. It's pretty primal.
But that was a very vanity moment. It's the vanity that you never see Tyler Durden having until that very moment.
I don't know. He's kind of always a little bit like that.
Yeah.
He's prideful.
But he doesn't look in mirrors until that one moment, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Think about the stunt guy who had to throw himself down the stairs. See, that,
yep.
That was not no. Edward Norton.
There was no way that was Edward Norton.
Stunt guys really take a beating.
Yeah.
Sound effects and the glass may be fake, but stunt guys really do throw themselves down the stairs.
Yeah.
And now we're back to the beginning. I love it when a movie starts and ends at the same spot.
Yeah.
That's nice. Full circle.
Yeah. It's kind of fun.
I love that trying to talk through the gun.
And it is especially creepy because those towers that they blow up are kind of like the Twin Towers.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure it was unintentional. They were just going for the just the downtown look. But
right. And I think this is downtown LA, right?
Yep. Well, I think the towers they're using, I think they actually did shoot Wilmington for this, for the backdrop.
Oh, you know what? I think this actually is Century City.
I was just thinking. I think those are the Twin Towers in Century City, which were designed by the same person who built the Twin Towers in New York.
Yes. No, it's definitely Century City.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Alrighty then.
I got a little nod from Serge back there tied up in the corner. He's like, yeah, Century City.
That's the Nakatomi Plaza on the left.
Oh,
yeah, oh, Serge managed to loosen his gag long enough to say that. All right, I'm going to tie Serge back up here. Give me a minute. All right,
I knew this looked familiar. I wonder which building this is actually in.
Mm. That's a good question.
It's probably just a soundstage, and they just threw that up in the background.
That's true.
No, you won't.
Yeah.
Because you won't exist.
Right, exactly. But the interesting thing about this is it saying that moving 100% toward masculinity is this is the ultimate failure of moving to 100% masculinity?
But is it really masculinity, or is it like what we were saying, that masculinity is responsibility?
It has to have a balance.
It's like it's a very primitive version of masculinity is what the way I've always seen it. It's just going back to the primitive urge to blow things up, to fight.
To do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
But at some point you have to like...
This is the part where I can't watch. You guys can watch
it. But it's almost like the same kind of, you know, before when he was just buying a bunch of crap and just having a bunch of IKEA things, you know, it was the same kind of thing. It was like an overindulgence. It was doing whatever you want.
Right, exactly.
You know, to a point where it became stale and boring and lifeless. Right. And even this, you know, doing whatever you want and in an extremely different way has become stale and boring and lifeless. I mean, I wouldn't say so much boring. I think a little more fearful. Yeah. But
life-threatening.
Right.
Yeah, still and life-threatening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he realizes the consequences.
Right.
Of his actions, which is why man eventually evolved and away from chaos.
Yep.
And it could potentially become, we were talking about how it becomes still and lifeless, quite literally lifeless in a moment if he aims wrong. Yep. Yeah, that's the moment I can't watch. All right, now we're good.
Really good special effects.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
Still good. Doesn't even look dated. Not even in this standard definition.
Yeah.
1999 DVD copy. It's brilliant,
oh,
though.
Oh, God. Yeah. I had forgotten that moment. I really wish I'd waited 15 more seconds to open my eyes. Oh. Anyway.
Well, it's a very, very violent movie. Even though, yep, I don't think it's glorifying violence, it's still extremely violent.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And in effect, even though it's not meant to glorify violence, it still does kind of, in a way, which is the eternal problem with movie violence.
Yeah.
The smoke just coming out.
Yeah. It's just... And he's just gone to a point in masculinity or something where the men can't even take it.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh. Here I am.
And he's the ultimate wounded man.
Yep.
She's so amazing.
Yeah, she really is. Oh my God. I'm trying to like picture this movie in my head right now with like a Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Oh my
she
God.
She comes in all
face.
Blonde. Yeah. With her perfect teeth, you know, and like ridiculous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gauze.
Yeah. And
famous last words. Mm-hmm. This song is so good.
It's a great song. It's funny, you know, I mean, it is the ending. The interesting thing, however, is, you know, looking at it from the perspective of actually having seen buildings go down, that you can see sort of the flaws in the special effects.
Oh, yeah, but they don't go down like that at all.
Yeah,
not even when you're actually intentionally blowing them up.
They go down, straight down.
The moment of the man's penis.
But even in the way that they're, like, standing holding hands with each other in the end, it almost kind of creates like a little, like, a heart shape.
Yeah.
I think that was intentional.
But then at the very end, they had the final splice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you wonder, is Tyler, well, Brad Pitt, Tyler still really gone, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you never lose that. You know, he integrated his personalities. You know, he's not going to ever lose that. He just has control of it now.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and Eon Bailey did pop up in the...
Yeah, it was Eon. Yeah. I always get him and Paul Rudd confused for some reason. I'm usually very good with actor names.
Anyway, thank you all for listening to us talk about the Fight Club from a woman's perspective. Now we'll all have to go back and listen to Fight Club from a man's perspective.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure it'll be. You know what, though? I'm going to go so far as to just guess right now that I don't think it's going to be all that different. I'm sure certain things will be said. I'm sure, you know, maybe they'll go into a little bit more into the violent areas. But I think maybe, like, the themes might be similar.
I will be fascinated to listen and actually find out, because it would be fascinating if their view was entirely different. And it turns out we don't know the male psyche at all, which is the point of this film.
It could be. And then I guess they don't know us. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, we're not all so different, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's the little thing called hormones, you know, that just kind of separates us a little. But
and this movie's definitely about male hormones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But women have testosterone, too. You
it's
know,
true.
They do.
It's in the
they
balance.
Do.
It's in the balance. So, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think in the end, I kind of feel like the movie was really just a lot about control and masculinity, but through control and responsibility. And.
But I think it's also an interesting sort of hypothetical what would happen if you indulged those primitive, you know, hormone male urges that men have, and it's like, well, maybe this would probably happen, and
it would scare
maybe
you.
That's not so good.
Yeah.
Did you think of the symbolism of Tyler Durden being in the basement and that battle at the climactic final battle starting in the basement, but it concludes and he gets rid of Tyler Durden at the top floor of a building.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, the basement to the...
He's taken back over his life, you know, even though it's like in shambles.
Yep. But I feel
he's
like
on
a film
top
student.
Of it.
And he's ready to become the responsible man who's maybe not a slave to consumerism or a slave to his violent urges, but, someone who's ready to have a real relationship with somebody.
Right.
If it's possible.
And is that not the scariest thing in the whole entire world, you know?
Yeah. And
it is a romantic comedy.
No. Scene.
There we go. Well, thank you all for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
It was a really interesting. You know, I've done several of these commentaries, and I think that it was definitely interesting. I've never done one with all women. Usually, I'm the only woman.
Oh. Well, Serge will have to plan more of these if we ever untie him. So, all right, Serge, time to cut off the sound with your nose.
Well, I will say goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
And this is goodbye from Film Grok. Please join us next time. This is Heidi Hilliker saying goodbye.
This is Nicole Gustis saying farewell.
And
this is Laura Thompson saying goodnight.